Well, it gives me the most enormous pleasure to introduce today's speaker. I should fasten your seatbelts if I were you and get ready to fly at 30,000 feet. Here's the most amazing speaker. I have it on good authority. You're going to be enraptured with Doug, who's from Washington, D.C., USA.
Wow, we got 1,000 people out here.
They don't know that.
So I embellish a little bit, imagine that. And I don't need a stand, please. I like the pace. So I wrote a couple notes here first. I wanna say, welcome Damaram, England. And that's where I'm speaking today because this is on a speaker tape. So what I did is I wrote the word and then I took out the H. Because being American, I would call it Damaraham, and that's just not the way it is. Also, I'd like to thank just a few people for being so kind. I flew in here, I don't even know what day it is. It's Saturday, yes? It's Sunday. Sure, okay. So I leave tonight. No, I do. I flew in here Friday. No, I flew in here Saturday, and I'm going to be leaving tonight. We're getting some feedback. I'm going to be leaving, coming back first thing in the morning, so... I'm a little confused on what day it is and where I am, but I'm going to show you in the big work where it talks about permanent sobriety. And that's kind of freaky for people when they hear about permanent sobriety, word recovered, which is in the big book 82 times. I actually counted it. Yes, I do not have a life. And so I want to tell you my story, but I want to tell you my story on how I was brought through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and how I didn't feel I needed to go out and drink again to get sober, because that's just a bunch of bull. We don't need to do that. I want to thank the newcomers who I met at a phenomenal meeting. I'm telling you, you build the best churches. They are the coolest. I spoke at this church, I don't know, it was in England, and it was just so awesome. I met a whole bunch of newcomers that are here, and they're visiting to hear the full message. I had 30 minutes to do it, so I probably rocked your world. And they're shaking their head like, you know, they're walking at the walls like, ugh. But I also want to thank Kevin and Andy for picking me up at the airport. If we can give them a big round of applause. Bob and Helen here have just been like driving me around, and I don't know, but thank you for picking me up at the wonderful hotel that you all put me up, and if you give them a big hand. Matt drove me home from the meeting last night, and so thank you, Matt. And Ian and I are going out and partying in London tonight. Let's rock. Give a big hand. Me and my man. My name is Doug, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. If you ever want to hide something from an alcoholic, put it in their big book. When people hear that I say the word, my name is Doug and I'm a recovered alcoholic, sometimes I am the hit of the meeting because the meeting's all about me. We know that. As long as it's about me, we're all good. But if you just look at the front page of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it states something like this. How many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism? So let me tell you what that means. It doesn't mean that I'm cured. Recovered and cured are totally different, okay? If you take the symptoms of, let's say, cancer, my mother had cancer, and you take those symptoms, she had the symptoms of cancer, and she went through the chemo, and after 5 years, she was considered recovered, correct? With alcoholism, it's different. If you take the symptoms of alcoholism, and that's the obsession of the mind and the craving of the body. Now, you got to understand, I thought I was just weak. I just didn't understand how come I couldn't get this thing under control. And it had nothing to do with weakness. It had to do with this. When my wife drinks alcohol, she's from Rome, Italy. She has a glass of wine every night, clockwork. Sometimes she feels frisky and she may have two. I've never had two anything in my life. I was just talking to a gentleman. I was going to have three pieces of cake. So I don't even have one. She has one glass of wine. When she drinks this wine, it comes in as alcohol. It turns to formaldehyde, which is a poison. It goes to barley and hops, which is what it's made of, and then it goes to water and it goes out. They got a four-step process. We, as alcoholics, have been blessed with a five-step process. We have an extra one. It comes in as alcohol. Take the one sip. Did you ever notice people saying, the first drink gets me drunk? I'm like, well, then you're a loser, because it's 18 beers for me and a fifth of scotch. That'll do it. But what they're saying is, when we drink the alcohol, it comes in as alcohol, it goes to formaldehyde, elusiveness, but then we get the, oh my God, if one was like this, 20 is going to be phenomenal. And it's because we form this codeine-like substance in our mind, in our brain. Literally, we form. And it makes it virtually impossible to stop, and we are restless, irritable, and discontent until we again get a sense of comfort and ease from another drink, as quoted in the Big Book. Did they know what they were talking about? Absolutely. And so we go on to the 20s, to the 25s, to the 50s, to the blackouts. So am I an alcoholic? Well, the question is, do I have the phenomenon of craving once I start in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous? And the answer to that is, let's see. I'm a fact guy. I love facts. I'm a professor. I'm being taped, so I'm not going to tell you where I'm a professor at. And I'm also not going to tell you what airline I flew for. So if you're afraid of flying, please leave the room now, because we got some great stories going on here. And yes, I will tell you how I lost an airplane. Most people lose cars. I lose airplanes. But what happened was, in 1995, alcohol testing came in January 1st. So December, you make your schedule, and I couldn't figure out. The way it used to be, the rule read, 8 hours from drinking, we used to call it 8 hours from bottle to throttle, right? We've got some airline people or pilots in here. I kind of took that regulation, and I said, okay, 8 feet from bottle to airplane. Makes sense. The new regulation came in and said, if you blow a .125, please. I've had hangovers 3 days later where I couldn't pass that. So I fought that, because I was the head of the union, with my life. I have the right to drink, the God-given, are you kidding me? Try to fight that one. So I lost. And in January, alcohol testing came in. So I had a problem here. I had a big problem. How was I going to be able to drink and fly? It just wasn't going to happen, right? Now, I would stop hours before, but it was just, you know, I'm in shambles. And you all understand where I'm coming from. So on January 3rd, I started shaking really bad. I was supposed to go fly, I think, January 4th out of Washington. I was based out of Washington. And so what did I do? I had one drink, right? And everyone here who's an alcoholic is smiling, and the Al-Anon people are like, okay, I get it. So you had one drink. Let me finish the story. So what happened was this. I had one drink. The phenomenon of craving came in, and I woke up February 1st, 1995. So now you could kind of come up with the conclusion, this guy's an alcoholic. I get it. There was bottles everywhere, blood everywhere, feces, urine. It was absolutely disgusting. I'm shaking violently. I'm like this big around. And I look at the edge of the bed, and there's a note there. And it was from my then wife. I married a flight attendant. Imagine that. And she said to me, you turned out just like your father, who actually drank himself to death at my age right now. And I took the kids, and the kids were 3 and 2 at the time. And I went into convulsions, and I screamed at the top of my lungs, why have you forsaken me? Right? Now, I'm atheist, and I'm screaming at a God that I don't even believe in. And this peace came over me that I have never experienced in my life again, ever. And I raised up from the bed, and I don't mean I levitated. I mean I sat up, and this voice came in, and it said, it's over. And it said it 3 times, it's over. And then a telephone number came into my head, and I called it. And it was the airline that I was flying for, and it was the employee assistance program. Now, I never even knew we even had an employee assistance program. I didn't even know what it was. And when he answered, I hung up. And then I called again, and I hung up. And And finally, the guy goes, stop. He says, this is a secured line. He said, what's going on? I'm like, I think I'm an alcoholic. I'm missing January. January's gone. And I'm telling this guy, I think I'm an alcoholic. Only can come from us, right? Can we mask things to make things look good? I think I'm an alcoholic. When you say that in the airlines, they come and they knock you out. I mean, it's like the CIA. You no longer exist. They cut you out. So I get these three big goons come, and they say, listen, once you admit this, you have to hand over your license, and you may never fly an airplane again. Now, you got to understand, that's who I was. I've always been, and I will always ever be, because it gave me a purpose in my life. And so you could not take that away from me. So I told them to leave. And as they're leaving, I'm crying, because I knew I was going to die like my father. And I was 32 years old. I knew it, because I almost failed a medical because I was getting cirrhosis of the liver. And I'll tell you that story when I get to step 9. So what happened was, he was leaving, and Captain Bill turned around and he looked at me and he says, you no longer have to live life like you're living it. And I felt the gods came down and touched me, because the abusiveness of my family, verbal. My wife once told me, she said, I wish you would hit me rather than talk to me the way you do. It was absolutely disgusting. And the way I treated my two beautiful, and it went on and on and on. And I said, let's do it. And I handed in my licenses. South Beach, Miami. Not bad for February. So that's where the drunks go. Of course we pick South Beach. Why not? So I go into this place. My wife was there for some reason. And this little psychiatrist, littler than me, has his feet up on the table. And he looks at me and he says, you're an angry little fella. And I looked at him and I said, F you. And I screamed it at the top of my lungs. And I told my wife, I'm like, we're getting out of here. Right? As I'm going for the door and I'm about ready to touch the doorknob, he looks at me, he says, you touch that doorknob, I'll make sure you will never even fly a kite. I'm sitting there like this. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives have become unmanageable. I just hit step 1. This guy is controlling my life. Because if I don't graduate from this program, and I use the word graduation from this Happy Hills farm that I had to go to, if I didn't graduate, I was never going to fly an airplane again. And remember, that's who I was. So this beautiful 28-day program, well, it was 28. They kept me in the hospital for 28. And then they kept me there for another almost 40 days. So for a total of 50 days, I was there for a total of 72 days. And I like to say that because the 28-day program, I believe they liked me so much they kept me in a little longer. But I was a total mental case. And so what they did is they took me and they put me into this room with the heroin addicts. They didn't put me with the pilots. And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. I got my suit here. I got my little Louis Vuitton over here. These guys are vomiting and puking. No offense to you heroin guys. You stink. And I'm like, where's my room? Pinky out. Where's my room? I thought I was in Club Med for a little dry out. So I'm in with these heroin addicts. This big guy says, get to your knees. And I'm like, whoa. Dude, you do whatever you want to do. That's not my style. Right? And he's like, all right, genius, listen. Get to your knees, pray. I said, did they not say, on my application, didn't it said, I'm an atheist? He says, so you don't believe in God? I said, no. He says, all right, well, that's cool. Get your bag. And I'm like, all right, that's it. You don't believe in God, you get to go. It's like, go home free. And so I picked up my bag. I'm like, later, guys, stinky sons of bitches. Take it easy. And I go to the elevator. It goes, get out. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Why is everybody trying to throw me out of this place? I got to graduate. And that's when I said I got to graduate. He said, then get to your knees. I said, okay, all right. Come on, let's go back. Come on. Come on to the bedroom. We'll go back. We're good. He goes, right now, on the floor in front of all these people. And oh, I still get chills thinking about what I had to do. I get to my knees, and my prayer was, you know, thank you. Beep, 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 beep. And he's like, oh, that's good. I like that. And he got up, and then I went to my room. I have not missed a day since, and I've been sober for a little over 20 years. I don't know what it was about that, but it talks about in the big book, what happens is that we get beaten into submissiveness. And I think everybody that's sitting here right now understands that. I leave there after 72 days. Now, they can't throw me out. They're like, you got to go. I'm like, no, no, I don't want to be a counselor. Get out. So I leave, and I go up, and I'm in Florida. I'm living on Amelia Island. I have no job. I have no licenses. I have nothing. But I have a wife, two beautiful children, and the wife's still a flight attendant. So I'm playing mom, dad, which is really cool. It was really cool. But I did something that most of us do. And if I had to do it over again, I wouldn't have done it this way, but I did. And I went to 3-4 meetings a day. I neglected the family. I brought drunks over all the time. They were breaking up the house, right? And that's the way I did it. And I went to institutions. I went to jails. I did everything I could to stay sober. And that really made my wife at that time resentful at you all, because she was figuring to herself, how come these drunks could sober him up, but I couldn't sober him up? So what happened was, 90 days came, but the only thing I was doing is I was not drinking and going to meetings. Not drinking and going to meetings is your death sentence. I want everybody to understand that. I have never seen anyone who is a true alcoholic, as outlined on page 21 of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, that ever stayed sober, happily, and did not drink and go to meetings. And I was one of them. So at 90 days, I'm picking up this little chip. We call them trinkets or whatever you want to call them, door prizes. And I was picking up this chip, and I was so excited, and I was going to leave and go drink. And I was so excited about drinking. And as I said last night, in Florida, we have drive-through liquor stores, which is so phenomenal, because if you're too drunk to get out of your car, you just drive through it, right? And the whole left side of my car is scraped up because I'm trying to get close to the window. And they're like, here's that captain again. Hey! Stripes everywhere. I got my hat on sideways. Gallon of vodka. So I'm running out of the building with my little trinket, and it's a green, beautiful AA chip. And this guy, boo, steps in front of me like this. And he says, hold on a second, genius. Now, he calls me genius because I got an aerospace engineering degree. He goes, hold on a second, genius. And he says, very condescending. And he makes me feel this big, right? And I'm looking, I'm like, Greg, what? And he's from Hoboken, New Jersey. And there's one place lower than Hoboken, and that's called the Bowery in New York City, right? If you hit the Bowery, you've hit the jackpot of alcoholism, right? So he says, you're acting a little more weird than usual. So this is what we're going to do. I'm going to give you this big book. And you're going to come over to my house on Tuesdays and Thursdays, because I know you're not working, so you got, like, extra time on your hands. And he's going like this. And he's talking to me with this condescending voice. And he says, if you show up at 8:01, don't show up. He says, if you lie to me once, I'm going to fire you. Get it, genius? And he stepped out of the way, and he goes, have a nice drink. And I was pissed. And I'm like, I will. And I leave. Like, I'll show him. I drive up to this light, and there's 5-point liquors. And I swear to God, there was like a halo over it. La, the palm trees are swaying. Come here, Douglas. Come here. And as I'm driving, my car makes a left. And I said, it's Saturday, and I'm meeting this guy on Tuesday. I said, I'm going to give a chance, and I'm going to see what happens. And I held on with white knuckles saying, I'm not drinking today. And that's what don't drink, go to meetings gets you. First thing he did is he pulled out this big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. He turned to the preface, and he said, because this book became the basic text for our society. He says, that means it's a textbook. And a textbook means I am going to have to teach you this book. Now, you got to understand that I went through this book already twice. I read it because when I was in Happy Hills Farms in Miami in a padded cell, there was a guy like me, but he wasn't like me. He was different. But he came in and he talked good, and he smelled good, unlike my roommates, and he looked good, and he was sober, and I asked him to be my temporary sponsor. I guess that's like having temporary hemorrhoids. And so what he did is he gave me a book that was on the shelf. He says, read this. I said, okay. I went back to my padded cell with my heroin roommates, puking all over the place, and I read it, and I called him up, and he says, so what did you think? I said, well, I read it. He goes, you read what? I said, I read the big book. He goes, you read the first 164 pages? I'm like, yeah. What else am I going to do? I'm in a padded cell. And I said, first thing is, this guy Bill is a loser. And the second thing is, it's written very poorly, and that's coming from a math major. And I know English, like, terribly. And he says, read it again. I said, okay. And I went back, and I read it again. Bill's still a loser, and it's still written poorly. So I thought, that's what you did. You just read the big book. It's a textbook, and it needs to be taught to you. When you come to my office to do the steps, I do not even let you touch that book except to highlight the areas I tell you to highlight. It's a textbook. And the next thing he showed me was this, which was amazing, because we're still in the front of the book. And he said here on the forward to the first edition, it says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered. It says, from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, as I told you, alcohol, formaldehyde, codeine, barley and hops, water. That is the allergic reaction that we get when we drink alcohol. He says, to show other alcoholics, now we got these squiggly lines, italicized, precisely, which I think means exactly, how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. There's a main purpose of this book, right? Of this book. The objective is to help you to find God. The main purpose is to show you precisely exactly how we have recovered. He says, so if it's not in the book, we're not going to talk about it. And I'm going to rocket you through this book as fast as you can because it's like penicillin. You have a disease. Do you want me to give it to you a little at a time or do you want me to jam it into you? Now, people will sit here and they'll look at me and they'll say, aren't you going to miss something? Of course you're going to miss something. Why do you think we got nightly inventory? Of course you're going to miss something. But the big stuff is going to come out. We're going to talk about the big stuff. And that's the stuff that we needed to talk about to do the psychic change that we're talking about. That is the deal. So what happened was he went into the second edition and he says that every alcoholic who journeys will find the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous at his destination. The fellowship. Please understand this. Two parts to this. We have the fellowship, which is the meetings, which I love, which is this, which is the best pot pie I have ever eaten in my life. And where is that lady? You're like, I have a chain of restaurants. Could I just bring you over to, I mean, they're Italian, but we can go English. It doesn't matter to me. Awesome. Fellowship is this, with this lovely lady and chef who made that food for us. But then we have the program of recovery. And when my first sponsor, when he told me that I did not work the program of recovery and that I was the fellowship mayor, and he told me to stop speaking at meetings because I sound like a babbling idiot, that he was going to show me at his house the program of recovery. And the program of recovery are the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the program. The program of recovery is outlined in the big book. And when they wrote the big book and it came out in April 1939, they were hoping that it would not get watered down. And at that time, we were at a 75% sobriety ratio for 1 year. How do we know? People used to sign the book for anonymity reasons. That doesn't happen anymore. But 75% of the people that came in made it. Do you know what it is today? It's between 8 and 13. What happened? AA got watered down, period. What happened was in the 1950s, the court started saying, Mr. Uncle Fanny got a DWI because he lost his wife of 60 years, and we want you to go to AA meetings. And he goes to AA, and he finds us, all these beautiful 1,000 people out there in southern England. And He walks in, he sees us, and he's like, this place is cool. We're talking about crazy stuff, and we're laughing about it, and we're having fun, and we're eating your wonderful food. And he's like, I'm in. Then a little short, pudgy guy from Washington comes up to him and says, Uncle Fred, you sound so wonderful. Will you sponsor me? And he says, sure, laddie. Well, we actually don't say that in America, but I thought I'd talk your language. And so he says, absolutely. And I'm like, hey, I hear about this big book. Let's work the steps. And he says, slow down. Take your time. And I'm like, okay. And I'm not drinking, and I'm going to meetings, and I have nothing else but not drinking and going to meetings, and I drink. And what happens? I come into Uncle Fred. I'm like, Uncle Fred, I drank. You needed to do that to get sober. Yeah, I know. I start laughing, too, when I hear that. But it gets me so aggravated that I stop the laughing because Uncle Fred does that with all his heart. Now, is he trying to kill me? Absolutely not. But I am a of the page 21 version of The Real Alcoholic. And so what happens is I go out again, and I go out again, and I go out again, and then I die. And I've seen this 1,000 times. Because Uncle Fred is not an alcoholic. He's not even a hard drinker. He just got caught driving drunk. He lost his wife of 60 years, and that's how they deal with it. When my mother died, I went to a meeting. What did my sisters do? They polished off a bottle of wine, woke up with a hangover, and never did it again. Is that like us? No. So let's just go over real quick. We go through the doctor's opinion, and then we go through Bill Wilson's story, which he's still a loser, but he writes a great book, and he starts a great organization. And it says to this, there is a solution. Imagine saying this at a meeting. Nearly all have recovered. They have solved the drink problem. Can you imagine saying that? Hi, my name is Doug. I'm a recovered alcoholic. And I have solved my drink problem. Are you interested? People will be like throwing stones at me. I mean, this is in There Is a Solution, the tremendous fact for every one of us. We couldn't even agree on where to go, two of us to go for dinner tonight. Ian and I are probably going to have an argument on where to go to have dinner in London. He's bigger than I am, so I will submit. They're saying the tremendous fact is that every one of us, the first 100, they all agreed. We have a new way in which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly, harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who are affected with alcoholism. We feel that drinking of our drinking is but a beginning. The eliminating of drinking is but a beginning. That's it. How many people do this? 1, 2, 3, drink. 1, 2, 3, drink. We call it steps 1, 2, 3, then drink. 1, 2, 3, because they don't get to the fourth step. Does that make sense to everybody? I don't know why it happens, but all I want to tell you is this. There's three types of drinkers, and I'm going to ask you right now which type you are, because we're still, as I'm bringing you through this big book, we're still in the first step. Think about it. By the time you get to the second step, you have already read almost 62 pages to get to the first step. That's how dense we are. That's how I could say I think I'm an alcoholic after missing January 1995, which I still have not found, by the way. Number one, moderate drinker. I love this one. Moderate drinker. Have little trouble giving up liquor entirely. Well, I'm just going to wipe that one right off. I'm putting that one to the side because that was not me. Number two, hard drinker. He may have the habit badly enough to gradually impair him physically and mentally. He may cause him to die a few years before his time. If a sufficient strong reason, ill health, falling in love, changing of environment, or a warning of a doctor becomes operative, he stops or moderates. I'm 32 years old. I'm a captain, which means that I have to go through physicals every 6 months. I go to take my physical, they take the blood, and I leave. I'm in Dallas, Texas on an overnight. All of a sudden, I get a call from the flight surgeon. You need to get to Washington. I'm like, okay, I'll see you when I fly in. He goes, no. I said, okay. You know, that means I get to take off, and I get to fly to Washington, and I don't have to fly the airplane, and I still get paid. I'm not thinking anything. Sitting in the doctor's office like this, and he looks and he goes, I don't care what you tell me. He says, you got a serious problem with alcohol and you got cirrhosis of the liver. And I'm like, because my white blood count was through the roof. And they took two samples and sent it back twice. And so I sit on this table, not warning the heed that he just says, My father died from cirrhosis of the liver at my age now. That's not it. I'm thinking, how am I getting out of this one? First thing I'm thinking of, how am I getting out of this one? So what do? I said, oh, my God, really? Oh, wow, that's okay. Can I ask a few questions? He's like, yeah. And so there's a lady there, and she's polishing some knives, and she's doing some stuff. And he's looking at me, and I'm like, hypothetically, if I was to continue drinking, how long would I have to live? And they looked at me like I had 9 heads. And I looked at him like, ballpark figure. And he goes, 45. And I'm like, I swear to God, the angels were singing. I then believed there was a God because I didn't think I was going to make it to 35. So I had an extra 10 years in my pocket. I'm like, oh, okay. I'll take care of this. I'm good. I'll take care of this. And he's like, you better take care of this. Next 6 months you come back. If your white blood count is high, I'm not giving you back your medical. Right? And I got it, doc. I got it. And I'm walking out and I'm like this. And I think I was even bowing like this. And I go to the bar around the corner. I'm like, I got 14 years to live. And everyone's like, wah! And I whip out my credit card. I buy everybody drinks. And we got slammed in celebration. So I'm not a hard drinker because a doctor told me I'm dying and I go out and celebrate. But what about the real alcoholic? We love this one. He may start off a moderate drinker. I was between 14 and 16. And then he may or may not become a continuous hard drinker. And I was up to probably about 21, 22, maybe. And then it says, but at some stage of his drinking career. Folks, if you're calling drinking a career, you might have a problem. Let's just think about that for a second. At some stage of his drinking career, he begins to lose all control of his liquor consumption once he starts drinking. That's the deal. And that's what happened with me. It says, these observations would be academic and pointless if our friend never took the first drink, thereby setting the big cycle into motion. And then it talks about a solution. This is the solution. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the solution right here. And when my sponsor read it to me, it says, almost none of us like the self-searching. That's steps 4 and 10. It says, the leveling of pride, which is step 1, because when you admit you're an alcoholic, it's pretty deflating of your pride. The confession, which is step 5, of shortcomings, which is 6 and 7, which the process requires for its successful consummation. Relapsers. The relapsers in the room. The newcomers are constantly relapsing, and you have not worked the steps out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You have never failed because you have never tried it. That is the good news. You will never succeed if you never do that. That is the bad news, and that is your choice. And so my sponsor looked at me. He goes, so what do you think, genius? I'm like, let's just keep moving forward. I'm good. I'm good with this. Then he went over to... So it talks about there is a solution. Then it goes into more about alcoholism. And more about alcoholism says, okay, this is the solution over here. But if you want to be an idiot and continue to drink, and it talks about that guy putting whiskey in his milk, blah, 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 this is what's going to happen to you. But if you really want to know what's going on after more about alcoholism, what we need to talk to is about we the agnostics. And we're going to talk about God. And I said, dude, I'm not in on this. I'm not in. And so we read through the big book. He said, lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously, but where and how would we find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object, we talked about the main purpose, the main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself. Then he went on, he says, either God is everything or he is nothing. Either God is or he isn't. What was your choice to be? It's called the second step proposition. And he read it right out of the big book. And I looked him straight in the eye, and I said, he's nothing. And he says to me, well, then you're pretty much hosed. And I'm like, but there's got to be a door number 2. Give me another option. He says, it's not. God, die. He says, so I said, okay, I guess I'm over it. I wasn't going to lie to him. He says, all right, will you come to believe that your last 92 days of, call it sobriety, I'm going to call it dry drunkenness, the last 92 days that you haven't drinking, do you believe that the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous has helped you? I said, absolutely, I could do that. We moved on. And then he went to step 3, And he said the third step prayer. Now, this is where I normally take my sponsees and I put them to their knees, because that's the way Dr. Bob used to do it in Ohio. And they wouldn't let you up off your knees until he believed that you believed that this was going to happen. My sponsor gets to his knees. My kids are running around the house. I am so embarrassed. I turned red, and I normally don't get embarrassed. And I'm like, please get up off the floor. I'm going to die here. And he goes, and you're the guy who used to poop his pants and pee himself in the middle of a bar, but you're embarrassed of me being on the floor. Okay, your thinking's about right for an alcoholic. So he finished the prayer, and he looked at me. He says, will you make a decision to finish the rest of the steps? And I said, absolutely, I could do that. And then what he did is he gave me the forms that I have. And I have cards up here if you wish, and you could email me, please do. And I think, Kevin, I sent you also the file, and I came up with forms that outline the big book and the 12 steps and all the forms that are in it. Everything. The paragraph, the sentence, where everything is. All right, to make it nice and simple for you. But what he did is he got up to the four step, he showed me how to do the four step, and then what he did is once we picked up the four step, he said, okay, now this is what we're going to do. He says, we have been trying to get a new attitude and relationship on our Creator. He said, we have admitted certain defects and certain rough troubles. We have put our fingers on the weak items in our personal inventory. And then he uses the word now. He says, now you're going to tell me everything that you came to me. And I'm like, oh, my God. I wrote a 20-page four-step, and I left out the thing. We all have the thing. And that's the thing we're going to take to our grave. And it happened in 1984. It happened in Knoxville, Tennessee. And it happened with a female, of course. And it was terrible. And I was never, ever, ever going to tell anybody that. So he looked at me. And Alcoholics Anonymous in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is perfect. Because what it does is it starts off, and he said to me, okay, this is what I want to do with you. He says, do you know why you're doing this? I said, of course I do. You're making me do this. He says, no, genius. Turn to page 72. He says, the best reason first for doing step five. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. I've seen that. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives, trying to avoid this humbling experience. And he looked me straight into my soul. And he says, are you trying to avoid this humbling experience by leaving something off your four step? And I'm like, No, and I'm tapping my foot, because remember he said to me in the beginning, you lie to me once, you're fired. And I looked at him straight in the eye with all this fear, and I'm like, I didn't leave anything off. Lie to him, just lied. And he goes, okay. And then he went on, trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. He says, you turn to an easier method without leaving something off? I'm like, no. He says, good. He goes, because almost invariably they get drunk. He says, having persevered with the rest of the program, they wonder why they fell. We think the reason is they never completed their house cleaning. He says, did you complete your house cleaning? You didn't leave anything off. And he says this 9 times, because in the big book, it's 9 times. And by the time he got to the end, it says, once we have taken this step, and he looked at me, he goes, all right, genius, one more time. He looked right into my soul. He says, I'm not going to ask you again. He says, are you withholding anything? And it says it right in the big book, because it says withholding nothing. And I went, I swallowed, I teared up, just like everybody does in my office when I catch them with the thing. Their lip starts quivering like 3 minutes. Because I get them all riled up when they're in my office. We're going to do resentments first. You got it? I got the paper out. Resentment, you ready? Okay, tell me what you came here not to tell me. And they're like, I was in jail. Right? And so I'm like, yes, it was 1984, Knoxville, Tennessee. I just puked all over the table. And I looked at him like when I was done, I went, oh my God, he thinks I'm a freak. And he looked at me, he goes, that ain't nothing. He says, let me tell you my thing. And he told me his thing. And I'm like, dude, that's sick. That's why I didn't go to a priest. Well, and when I was 7 years old, I decided to tell the priest the truth in confessional once, and he threw me out. So, no offense to Catholics, I married a Roman Italian whose father is the Vatican doctor. Yeah, so I stepped up, didn't I, in life. I'm sweating like a little fat boy, but I am a little fat boy, so let me just take this jacket. So then when we were done with step five, we went right on to step six. We went right on to step six. And it says here in step six, if you can answer the questions to your satisfaction, we then. How fast is then? Well, I think it's like then. We then look at step six. We have emphasized a willingness to be indispensable. We are now ready to let God remove from us everything which we have made objectionable. You'll notice on my forms that I have 62 character defects. I wrote down every character defect known to man. And I was 60 of them. But on the other side, because alcoholics could beat the hell out of themselves, and I'm sick and tired of that happening because we are great people. We're smarter, we're faster, we're better looking than everybody else. Alphons, could I have an amen on that one? And, right? And so I do this thing. But what I did is you'll notice on the other side of the form that it has the exact opposite of what you try to achieve. I filled that out. I went to my sponsor. We went into the seventh step. And the seventh step has a prayer to it, doesn't it? And the seventh step came up, and it says here, when ready, we say something like this. And he got to his knees. And guess who followed him to his knees? I did. I tear up just thinking about it. My Creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of your usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go off from here. Amen. It doesn't say amen after the third step. It says it after the seventh step. Why? Because the seventh step says, okay, I just looked from the fourth step all the way to the seventh. It was a bunch of crap. I'm ready to clean it up. Amen. So be it. Get over it. Don't keep it with you because you're about ready to get it cleaned out. You follow me on this? Let's stop beating ourselves up. There's no reason to do it because we have steps. And it says this, steps 8 and 9. We have a list of persons that we have harmed and whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took the four-step inventory. We subject ourselves to this drastic self-appraisal. Now we use the word now. What's now? Now means now. We whip out a form and we do the A step. People say there's no time frames in Alcoholics Anonymous. That is absolutely untrue. Now, next, immediate, launched. Those are the words that they use to go to the next step. So now I get a phone call. It's my airline. They said, Mr. Muir, congratulations. The FAA called us up. They said they're giving you all your licenses back. And, by the way, your number came up, and you're going to be a captain out of Washington, D.C. And I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. My whole life just changed in that instant. And I'm there, and I'm crying, and I'm, and my life is phenomenal. Well, it's first-year sobriety phenomenal. And crazy phenomenal. And my relationship with the kids are great. The wife, you know, I did a lot of damage there. And I go through training as a captain in Charlotte, North Carolina, and for 3 months. And I pass, and I do my first trip out of Washington, and it was on my sobriety date, February 1st, 1996. And I remember flying, and as I take off, it was about 100 overcast and a quarter mile visibility, and it was just, well, like London. And as I popped through the clouds at 10,000 feet, it was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen, the sun coming up. Now, you got to understand, I have close to, at that time, probably 7,000 flight hours. And I was amazed at the beauty. And I'm just like, oh, my God, you know. And then the pilot looked at me. He goes, where have you been? And I'm like, knee deep in the fifth? You know, because when we're drinking, everything's gray. You know, when the sun would come up, I'd take the maps. I don't know if I should be telling you this. And I would just cover the windows like, vampire, right? We got instruments, so we're cool. I just didn't like sun. It was terrible. And so what happened was I started flying, and I came home. And the two kids are in the back, and they're 4 and 3 now, and they got this new dad, and he's really cool, and he's really hip, and he doesn't yell, and he doesn't scream, and he's really laid back. He's got some crazy friends that come over and puke every once in a while, and his four-wheelers, they're still drunk. And they think I'm like this coolest guy, and I'm playing with them, and my wife is, hey, happy first year anniversary. I don't love you anymore. I want a divorce. I'm like, well, we don't have to paint the house yellow because I just bought a new house. So I'm like, we could paint it any other color. She goes, no, I don't know. And I said, I said, who is he? And she goes, that's not the problem. I said, I think it is. But, okay, do me a favor. There is a 7:30 men's meeting on the island. Take me to the 7:30 men's meeting. And I'm looking out the window, and she's screaming at the top of her lungs, F you, and F the big book, and F all of you, and F all your friends, and Al-Anon, and blah, 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 blah. She hated you guys. She hated you guys. And she was jealous. And I get it. I get it now. And we're like this. Her and I are like this. And so I left, and I went to Charlottesville, Virginia, because I found it. And I love Charlottesville, Virginia. It's where our third president was born and raised, Thomas Jefferson. And I got a big book thumper. And he says, what are you willing to do? I said, dude, I'm willing to go to any length. I'm good. I'm really good with this. I'm really going to do this. He says, okay. And he came to my little apartment. I had nothing. I had no furniture. I was in a roach-infested apartment. It was embarrassing. And I didn't want him to come over. And I wouldn't date. There's no way I would date because it was disgusting. And I had no money, right? I just got back my job. I mean, it was really humiliating. And a friend of mine would give me pieces of furniture. And so he came over, and I had one table and four chairs. And then I had a beanbag, and that was it. And so he came over, and we went through the A step. And I know you're not going to believe this, but I was a liar and a thief. And I used to break into houses. So I owed a bunch of people money. And I said, and then there were some bench warrants out for my arrest. And so I had to do something about this. And he wanted me to go up to New Jersey and to pay everybody back and make amends. I said, whoa, 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 cowboy. Whoa, whoa, slow down on this. This ain't happening. Are you kidding me? I'm on the fence, Tommy. I don't think this is going to work. And he says, really? All right, well, let's go back to the big book, another big book thumper in my life. And he comes back into the big book. And in the ninth step, it says, before taking drastic actions, which might implicate others, we secure their consent. My mother and my two sisters still live in the neighborhood. No way are they going to make let me go do this. So I said, I got this. We're good. Okay, I'll go up next week. Now, being an airline pilot, I could literally make direct amends anywhere in the world. That sucked. And I was going to rat my sponsor out for abusing that privilege that I had. Because I was literally on an airplane making direct amends. And it was terrible. But when I did it, and I went up to my mother and my two sisters, and I said, listen, this is the deal. I used to be a thief. My mother's like, what? My sisters are like, what? They got this big smile on their face. I'm like, yeah, I used to break into houses. And my mother's like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Right? My little sister's like, yo, bro. High five. I'm like, and I'm in a suit and tie. I made all my amends in a suit and tie. I don't know what that's all about, but that's what I did. So I thought it would ease the pain. At least I wasn't a loser, right? So I said, well, you know, I got these cards with money in it, and I'm going to go. But I'm a family guy. I'm a family guy, and it's going to harm our name, and I'm not going to go if it hurts you. I won't. I promise you I won't. They're like, my mother comes up and she says, and your mother's always a genius after you're 32. Up until then, she's an idiot. And then all of a sudden, you just figure out she was right in everything she said. And so my mother said, all right. She says, so what happens if you don't do it? I'm like, I said, okay. Supposedly, maybe, small chance, I might go out and drink again. All three of them at the same time. No, 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 we're good. We're good. Go ahead. You go. Here, you need any extra money? Here. So I'm at the door, you know, I'm like, hi, Mrs. Sullivan, it's Dougie. Little Dougie, hey, come on in, have some coffee. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to do this. And so I go there and, hi, Mrs. Sullivan, I used to break into your window and I used to steal money from you. And and I did that throughout the neighborhood the whole day. And I gave the money back and I did it. I felt like such a peon. And I went, and it was terrible, and I got back home, and I'm walking into the meeting, and there's my sponsor. I'm like, don't you talk to me. Don't talk to me. Like, my head's spinning, and I'm vomiting, and oh, man, I was pissed. He goes, okay, cool. No, no, we're good. We're good. Calm down. Yeah, sit down. And I sat down, and at the end of the meeting, he leans over. He goes, so where are you going next week? I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Are you kidding me? Next what? I'll do the state of New Jersey. That was the only one I had left. Because I did all the women. I did all the, I was even. I had 15 envelopes. I was putting $5 into each envelope in a week. And then when one would be done, I'd double up on the next one. Then I'd the next one. Then I'd double up on the next one. And now I had to go to jail time. So I looked. I called up the union. You can imagine all the explicit words they had there. And then I called up the chief pilot of that airline, and he says, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard of in my entire life. He says, but I wish you the best. He says, did you talk to the union? I said, yes, sir, I did. He says, all right, good luck. He says, you got a job when you come back. Just go get rid of this. So I went up, and my mother dropped me off at the jail, and this police center. And I walk in. I think I, like, had hangers with clothes on, you know, my Louis Vuitton. You know, like, I'm going to Club Med again. And I'm walking in, and the guy's like, what do you want? And I'm like, I'm Doug Muir. I think there's a bench warrant out for me. He's like, oh, there's actually 10. And I'm like, yeah, okay. And they put handcuffs on me. And I go in the back. And at this point, I still don't believe in God. I still don't believe in God. Huh? How thick is this? And this young attorney, well, I was 33 now, or 4, and so he looked young. He was 42. And he comes walking in, and he says, do you have any idea how much paperwork you just caused me? I'm like, do you think I care? I'm in handcuffs. And he goes, why are you doing this? He goes, you got kids. You're the pillar of the community. You've changed your life. And it says it in the big book. We may not overcome drink until we straighten out the past. And he says, this is the damnedest thing. And he went, stay here. In handcuffs. Okay. All right. Where am I going? And he leaves. He comes back. I don't know how long. It seemed like 9 years. But I got ADD. So he comes back. And he takes this form. And he slides it across the table, and he says, sign this. And I said, could I read it? He said, sure. The first thing I read was that I owed $172,000+. And I said, okay. And the big book came up in my head. It says, arranging the best deal we can, we let these people know that we are sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear to creditors no matter how far down the scale we have gone, for we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face him. And that's all that kept going through my mind. And I was afraid. I was afraid. And I said, okay, could we start off at like $250 a month, and then we'll go up to $500. And then from there, I could show you my contract, because I get on bigger airplanes. We get paid by weight and speed of air. And he's like, are you negotiating with me? You're in handcuffs. And I'm like, dude, you think you're the only guy I screwed? Are you kidding me? I said, I got 15 other people I'm paying, and alimony and child support out the yank. I mean, I'm busted, right? I will pay this back. And I made my last payment June 2nd, 2002. I paid everybody back 7 years. And so he looked at me. He goes, this is crazy. He says, yeah, let me just go rewrite this. He came back. We signed it. And now I'm out in front of the jail. I'm out in front of the jail. We didn't have cell phones. And I turn around, and I'm like, oh, my God, I'm free. And I walk back in. The guy, what do you want? It was this big guy, but I'm not a pleasant guy. And I said, I want to call my mommy. And so I called my mother, and I was like, come pick me up. She's like, pick you up where? I said, well, you drop me off. I'm free. And she picked me up. And we went back. And she says, what do you want to do? I said, I could do anything I want, anything. I was free for the first time in my life until you experience that. And so I said, take me to the airport. In the airlines in the United States, we get the right jump seat on each other's airlines for free. And then when they close the door, we go in first class, right? So I go on United, and I say, hey, I'm in Newark, New Jersey. I'm going back to Washington. And the guy goes, hey, just take a seat in first class. I said, cool. And I sit down, and as I'm quiet for a minute, this overwhelming God consciousness came over me. And I needed and wanted God at that moment more than ever. And I just bursted out crying. I mean, the kind of like, and I'm in first class, and this old lady's patting my head. Are you okay? Well, I want God. I want God. And the flight attendant's like, what's going on with this guy? And the cockpit door is still open. I remember the captain turned around, looking at me like, what's the matter with that guy back there? He wants God. And he's like, give him God. And I mean, it was hellacious. And they finally calmed me down. They offered me a drink. And they calmed down, and I got off that airplane, and for the next 5 years, I did not do anything, except read spiritual books. I didn't watch TV. I didn't listen. I just read and read and read and read and read, and found my God, and found my belief system. And from that day forward, I have never, ever had the obsession to drink again. Gone. so long as. So what I do now, what happened is there's going to be some things that you can't see these people, and it happened in 1984 with a girl in Knoxville, Tennessee, and it was really bad. And I think about it to this day, and I knew I had to make amends, but I didn't know who she was, and I didn't know where she was. And so there was this little house, this white house on a hill in Charlottesville, Virginia. It was for abused women. And I went up there, and I volunteered. And for 6 months, I heard stories, horror stories from women. And apparently, by just me listening to them and giving them spiritual advice, helped so many people. And so there's always a way of helping. And it was so painful what I watched these women go through. And I hire a lot of them now. I'll tell you what I do. It's a lot different than what I used to do. Because when I found out I got sober, I hated flying. And it's not good for a captain to hate flying. you don't want that, trust me. And then I did this big thing, and I was all over the TV, and the master came up to me of this this house for abused women, and she says, "You're that guy." And I said, "Yes, ma'am, I am." And she said, "Why are you here?" And I said, "Well, I'm going to tell you a little story, and you could do what you want with it." I said, if the public finds out, so be it. I said, and so I told her the story of what happened in 1984. And so we were sitting there, and she just couldn't believe, because that is a different human being. And so she looked at me, and she says, "You're going to need to leave." And she says, "You know, we forgive you." And that was better than not doing jail time, you know, because I was in jail in my body forever because of that. So if you think there's something you want a ninth step, it's a lie. And you're just fearful. And you have every right to be fearful. Every right to be fearful. But until you finish, and I mean finish that ninth step, it's going to be tough getting through life. It really is. And you just got to do it. And you just got to back up, and you just got to, as it says in the big book, just put it between the teeth and grit it and make it happen. Just make it happen. And that's what I did. And I'm relentless with my sponsees on the ninth step. Relentless. And there's no forgiving. It's just you do it or you leave me. Okay? Because this is the way it needs to be done if you truly want a massive spiritual awakening. I get into step 10, 11, and 12. That's my maintenance steps. I have the forms. Please email me if you will. I have the forms in the 10th step, and I keep them on the side of my bed. I did one last night, and I do them when I travel, and I write out the 10th step. And then from there, I pray and meditate with my wife. So I met my wife on an airplane. She was going back home to Rome, Italy, and I was actually the pilot, and saw her at the counter, and back then you could bring them up to the flight deck without, you know, getting shot. And I asked her for a phone number, and she just turned around and walked away, and I didn't think she spoke English. And the flight attendant was like, no, she speaks perfect English. I'm like, yeah. So we met 3 years later in Charlottesville, Virginia. Just so happened to meet her again in America 3 years later. We never exchanged numbers or nothing. And so that's how God worked in my life. And I have this most phenomenal wife and big, big Al-Anon. We have a site that you can go on and see all my speaker tapes from around the world, and she comes with me sometimes and speaks. She is a powerful Al-Anon speaker, and just humble and loving and beautiful, and we have this unbelievable life, and we pray and meditate every morning together. Every morning. And if you want to change your relationship with your loved one, try praying and meditating with them and get in an argument. It just doesn't happen. Maybe sometimes, but we work together also. So before I go to bed at night, I get on my knees. I get into bed, I write the 10th step. Now, you don't have to get on your knees. It's a Catholic thing. You can stand on your head and spit wood and nickels. So I get on my knees, and then I do the 10th step, and then I go to bed. I wake up. We take a shower. We get together. We set the alarm. She reads her Al-Anon literature, which, by the way, Al-Anon people, that rocks. I love that. I love your literature. And then the second thing we do is I read the 24-hour book, and then I read from the 81 verses of the Tao Te Ching, and that's just what we believe in. It's kind of a Buddhist spin. And then I set the alarm, and we go into contemplation and meditation, come out, and we talk about it, and we do that every day. every day. I did it this morning. I wasn't with her, though. And then what happens is I go through the day. And if I have a resentment, I stop and I literally fill out a four-step form. If I have fear, I still do the steps. 20 years later, you must be like, God, get a life. I got an unbelievable life. And then in my 12th step, what I do is every Saturday, I sit in my office. And I'm there at 10 o'clock in the morning. And everybody in Charlottesville, Virginia knows that. And a lot of these sponsors, they don't have truly time. They're called life sponsors. So they don't know the nitty-gritty. They send their sponsee to me. I'll get a knock on the door, right? And they'll say, my sponsor told me to come see you. And I bring them through the steps in 5 hours. And then they know they've done their fourth, they've done their fifth, they got out the thing, they've written out their eighth, they're ready to do their ninth, and I send them back. So now they have a plan for design for living. And the sponsors really enjoy being able to do that, and that's what I do on Saturdays. 8 times a year, I fly around the world and speak at conferences, and that's what I give back to you, the community, and the world. I try to do 4 international and then 4 national ones. I could do this every week, but that would be just be an ego booster. It's really silly how people treat speakers. I mean, you know, they're treated like this different. And it's so bad that when I speak with a bunch of speakers, I really don't hang out with the speakers. I don't enjoy it. I like hanging out with the new guys, like I was with last night, out in front of the church, watching them smoke. By the way, quit. And and just hearing their story and seeing the hope and being able, like, oh, my God, I've never heard anything like that in my entire life. And then maybe one of these guys I meet 5 years from now and they look totally different because they've been sober. If I could do that once, no matter where I fly or where I am, that's what my life's all about. So what happened to me? I hated flying. September 11th came and they offered a furlough to pilots, and I took the furlough with pay. And started a little company. It got big, and I sold it to AT&T. Started another company, got really big, sold it to a hedge fund. Then I started another company and sold it to Goldman Sachs and retired. Found out that I was really good at business, and I loved it. We have now 1,000 employees worldwide with the company I own. And I said, you know what? It's time to give back again. And I'm going to sell everything. And I started last September. The companies are really big, so it takes time to unwind. And I became a full-time professor at this very prestigious university in Virginia. And it's the best thing I've ever done in my entire life. I love kids, and I love their enthusiasm. I love entrepreneurship, and I love teaching it. And it's definitely not the pay. God bless you, teachers. But it's the love of what I do. And by being able to teach the big book to my AA friends and being able to teach entrepreneurship to engineers, I teach it in the engineering school because I'm an aerospace engineer, makes sense, this business minor that we have is the final completion of my circle. And I don't think I've ever been more peaceful in my life ever than I am right now. And I said this last night, and I'll say it again. People ask me how I'm doing, and I look at them, I say, if it gets any better, I'm going to shit a rainbow. And you know what? I really mean that. How could I not, by eating pot pies by you, young lady? I'm telling you, you want to come over to America, we'll start a pot pie factory. I don't know, something. Actually, that's pretty good. Let's talk afterwards. But having the ability to fly around the world and spread the original message of Alcoholics Anonymous in the big book and how I got my spiritual awakening is a gift that I cannot explain in words. But I am here for you today. And if anybody wants to talk to me afterwards, please let me know. I got some cards up here with my email address on it, so I don't have to write it 3 million times. And I'd be more than happy to share it with you. And I want to thank all the people who've been around, me and Ian, for partying tonight. We're ready to go out. I love you all. Thank you very much.